Blog Talk Radio.
Well, why won't we go to the doctor? My uncle called. Speech all slurred, complaining his arm's numb. He called everyone. He even called my daughter Tierra, because, you know, she's got a year of nursing. Everyone thinks he needs to go to the doctor, including me. So he said, well, will you take me? I'm like, I'm on the road. He goes, I'll wait. Stroke's no joke. Dial 911. Time loss is brain loss. Seriously, dial 911.
Visit StrokesNoJoke.org, brought to you by the American Stroke Association and the Ad Council.
Good morning and welcome to Saturday Mornings with Joy Keyes. I'm your host, Joy Keyes, and I want to thank you so much for waking up this morning and listening to me. I'm here in Philadelphia, a beautiful sunshine day, probably going to go up to about 85, tomorrow 90. That's a little too much for me, but I hope you are having wonderful weather where you are. And speaking of weather, I have Mark McEwen. He's a former CBS news anchor and also weatherman. He has interviewed presidents and superstars, but now he has a new job. He's a Power to End Stroke ambassador. Thank you so much, Mark, for coming on the show this morning.
Thank you, Joy.
Also on the show this morning, I have Dr. Ronnie Whitfield, another ambassador, but also he has another name, the Hip Hop Doc, and we'll talk about that a little bit. But he uses his love for music and helping people to try to combat some of the diseases we deal with, such as breast cancer and stroke and hypertension, HIV. Good morning, Dr. Whitfield.
Good morning, Joy. Pleasure to be here with you all.
Thank you. Also, I have a medical social worker on the line, Corinne Thomas. She is going to be sharing her story from a caregiver perspective this morning. Thank you so much, Ms. Thomas, for coming on.
Thank you. Good morning.
So this is a very serious issue, and I like to do shows about health issues because I'm African-American, and unfortunately African-Americans are suffering at greater rates of, you know, HIV and breast cancer, diabetes, all these things, and also, unfortunately, stroke. So May is Stroke Awareness Month, so that's why I'm starting off this month with this show. And I want to start off with the doctor. Please explain to the audience exactly what is a stroke, because many people don't know what it is.
Well, in the simplest form, and George Wilburn on your PSA said it perfectly, no flow, no go. A stroke is definitely not a joke. It is when there is a decreased blood flow to the brain for, by definition, greater than 24 hours. So it basically occurs when there's decreased blood flow, that decreases oxygen and nutrients to the brain, and that part of the brain will die. And at that point, you lose some ability to function, either your ability to swallow, taste, smell, see, walk. And so it's very important that we are aware of the signs and symptoms of a stroke, because if we are, we can actually either prevent it from happening or significantly reduce the disability associated with the stroke.
Now, why are African Americans at higher risk for having a stroke?
If we knew the answer to that question, we could answer a whole lot of things. We're really not sure. Behavior is a big issue when we talk about diet and nutrition. But when we talk about the particular risk for African Americans, we're really not sure. African Americans, we do know, are twice as likely to have a stroke than any other ethnic group. And when we do have a stroke, it tends to be a little bit more devastating. So there's definitely family history and genetics that are related, but it's a multifactorial cause. We're not actually sure why we're more at risk for stroke, but it goes along with our high incidence of diabetes, also obesity, hypertension. All these risk factors play a role, and couple that with behaviors, poor nutrition and lack of exercise, couple that together, and we have a very significant problem in our community.
Now, explain to the audience this acronym, FAST, F-A-S-T. What does that mean?
Well, we're talking about particularly the warning signs, the signs and symptoms of stroke. And actually, Joe, we use actually two acronyms. FAST is one. But what we want to do is basically raise the awareness about stroke, educate our people. And we're talking about numbness or weakness of the face, arms, or legs, especially on one side of the body, confusion, trouble speaking or understanding, trouble seeing in one or both eyes, trouble walking, dizziness, loss of balance and coordination. These things come on suddenly, a severe headache of no known cause. If you have these warning signs of stroke, we want you to respond rapidly by calling 911. But most importantly, if you can't recognize them, I can respond. So I've been involved with the American Heart and American Stroke Association, working with Mark, trying to educate the community about our Power to End Stroke campaign. And that is a campaign basically to raise the awareness about stroke, its warning signs and symptoms, and to give us the tool, the power, to recognize and to save lives.
Well, I want to tell the audience the website is www.powertoendstroke, that's all one word, .org. Again, that's powertoendstroke.org. And you definitely need to check that out. There's lots of wonderful resources on the website. and lots of events going on that you can attend to learn more about what is a stroke and how to support people that may be going through having a stroke. Also, the American Stroke Association, their website is strokeassociation.org, and I want to give a shout-out to Toya, who definitely was instrumental in helping get this interview together between Dr. Whitfield and Mark McEwen. Mark, good morning. I just want to bring you into the conversation here.
Good morning. By the way, I know what the acronym FAS is for. F is for face. If a person has a droop on one side of their face, that's a symptom. A is for arms. Have a person who's says they don't feel quite right and they're confused to raise their arms out in front of them. If they can't do that, then that's a symptom. S is for speech. Have them repeat a common phrase, the sky is blue. If they can't say something like that, then that's a symptom. And T is for time. There's a window of they've stretched that window a bit longer, but 3 hours is a good window. They have drugs that can mitigate the damage that a stroke can cause.
Yes. Now, you talked the last acronym, T, time. In your situation, you were on an airplane. Please talk to the audience as best you can about that experience. You lost a lot of time in your experience.
Well, on the airplane was my second experience with stroke. I had one 2 days before. Went to an ER emergency room, and the doctor there said I was suffering from the stomach flu. If anyone had said the word stroke, we'd be having a different conversation now. So I flew home. I live in Orlando. That was in Baltimore, where I'm from. And so on the plane, it got kind of weird. And
to say the least, weird.
I had no frame of reference, so I thought it would go away. And it turned out it didn't. I couldn't talk, couldn't move, could barely walk. And I had the presence of mind at the Baltimore airport to have a wheelchair, which I also had at the Orlando airport. And the sky cab, when I kind of stumbled off the plane, put me in the wheelchair, wheeled me curbside and left me by myself next to baggage claim. And I was, in a word, dying. And so I called my wife. She about lost her mind. I could barely talk. And she said, hand the phone to someone who can dial 911. And he did. An ambulance came and got me, took me to the hospital, and my journey began.
Yeah, that was very frightening. Even just reading that you were in the wheelchair in your book and you talking about the guy didn't even notice what was happening to you because he was so focused on just getting you to the curb outside the airport. Dr. Whitfield, Mark mentioned that he had a small stroke before he got on a plane, and that in the book he talked as a TIA. Can you talk to the audience about what a TIA is?
Yeah, TIAs are where the actual word means transient ischemic attack, and it's a temporary of loss of blood flow to the brain. And so it presents just like a stroke. You can have all the signs, slurred speech, loss of balance, dizziness, loss of coordination. All those signs will present, but then they resolve. The unfortunate thing about that, and that's why the Power to End Stroke campaign is so important, is that people aren't aware of these signs or symptoms, so they'll ignore them, like, oh, it must have been a bad day, maybe I was tired. But when a person has a TIA, the body's actually warning you that you are at risk for having a stroke, and a significant proportion of individuals will actually go on to have a stroke after a TIA. So it's about 40% of all people who suffer a TIA will actually experience a stroke within the next 3 to 6 months. So you must be aware of these warning signs. When I was in school, I was taught, hey, young doctor, if you don't know the signs of colorectal cancer, the warning signs or the symptoms of prostate cancer, stroke, heart disease, how can you diagnose a patient? Well, it's the same thing with the patients. We must raise the awareness of these warning signs, symptoms, know the risk factors, know your family history so that you can be cognizant of these things and make very good decisions.
Yes, definitely. I want to read a little bit from Mark's book here. He talks about, over the next few months as I began my rehabilitation and became more and more involved with the people at the National Stroke Association and the American Stroke Association, I learned that even though there are approximately 240,000 cases of TIA reported in the United States each year, the actual number is estimated to be several times that. meaning that most of these events go undetected. So as the doctor mentioned, don't ignore those symptoms that you might be having. And again, that an acronym FAST, talking about your face, numbness in your face, inability to move your arms, S standing for problems with your speech, and then time being of essence, making that phone call to 911. I just want to give some numbers out here. You can also reach the American Stroke Association at 1-888-4 and the word stroke. Again, that's 1-888-4 and the word stroke. So if you have any questions, reaching out to them. They have support groups all across the country. Also, for the National Stroke Association, you can check their website, www.stroke.org, and their phone number is 1-800-STROKES, and that's strokes plural. Mark.
So I kind of wonder, the National Stroke Association uses the FAST mnemonic, and the American Stroke Association just uses the warning signs and the different mnemonics. So at the end of the day, the symptoms are the same,
right.
But the FAST mnemonic is specifically for the National Stroke Association. That was their way of educating individuals about stroke and its warning signs. And at the end of the day, they both are very good mnemonics, and they work well. And of course, me being a hip-hop doc, I like to try to make them rhyme and go together. So
let me tell the audience, Dr. Whitfield is a musician. Are you still a musician? You're playing in different bands?
Yes, we actually played last night. We had a function last night, and I'm tired. And I'm on the way to talk about heart disease this morning to a group of nursing students at Southern University.
Oh my God! Talking about busy schedules, Mark. So you had this stroke, and in the book, that was one of the big issues of how to get back to your life. What can you tell people who've had a stroke? Some words of hope to them about getting back their life.
Well, I went to the gym this morning. I go just about every day. I'll be honest, they scared me. And I've always said they got me easy the first time. I'm making it harder and harder for them to ever get me again. So I eat a lot of fish, a lot of fruit, lots of vegetables. When I went on the book tour, I did a bunch of interviews, and one of them was with a former Surgeon General, and he said, everything in moderation, and those are words you can live by. So when I first had my stroke and was a stroke survivor, I kind of was really Spartan in terms of what I ate, and I would stay away from pizza and stuff like that. Now, every now and again, if you like a treat, if I can't remember the last time I had chocolate cake, I'll have a piece. But you can't do that kind of stuff every day. And being aware is, as I said, power is knowledge. Be aware of what your body is. And, again, a person who is in good shape and slimmed down and all that can still suffer a stroke, but the you can reduce the chances of a stroke happening. Joy, I wouldn't wish a stroke on my worst enemy. What I've been through it's like watching paint dry to recover. Someone once said that, but there is hope. And I'm in the process of talking again to CBS about doing interviews on national TV.
Wow.
I give speeches all around the country about my experience, and I want people to know that if I can do it, I want them to know they can do it.
They can do it, and that's important. I think that's what I got from your book, is the issue of hope, and what I also got from a book, you have a huge support system. You have a very loving, caring family and many friends that reached out to you during your recovery process and throughout your life. You just have a lot of friends. And I think, Dr. Whitfield, you could speak to this, the importance of that support in terms of recovery. Talk to the importance of having, you know, family and friend support in recovery for patients.
Oh, it's so important. That's why I'm glad we got Corinne on here this morning. You know, you have a stroke, and people just think about the medical problems, but it's the support for the person that had the stroke, but it's also the caregivers as well. And a lot of people don't even take in consideration the stress levels. You've got a fully functioning husband or wife who's employed and doing well, and a lot of these individuals that I deal with don't have insurance. So when they have a stroke, I mean, it can be quite devastating financially, spiritually, psychologically. So especially amongst men tend to not deal with losing their abilities as well, you know, like their loss of function. I was taking care of my family and working hard every day, and I had the stroke. Now I can't walk anymore. I can't, you know, I can't take care of myself. And so that stress has caused, in my practice, divorces, lots of depression, anxiety, thoughts of suicide. So it has a huge impact. I mean, the indirect and direct cost of stroke for the year of 2010 is estimated to be over $73 billion. $73 billion. And, again, the caregivers are so important, especially if they can handle the situation. But when they can't, it can be quite devastating to the family and destroy family units.
Talking about the caregivers. Mark, go ahead, sir.
Joy, I agree with Ronnie. Caregivers are very important. They don't get the props that they should get. The attaboys that the person who is a stroke survivor goes through, they need to hear that. But the caregiver is a person who is kind of, they didn't suffer a stroke, but they're right there, right by the person who did side.
Right.
And can't say enough for them. And I tip my cap to every caregiver out there.
Well, Corinne, I want to bring you into this conversation talking about caregivers. You did not have a stroke, but your husband did. Talk to us about that and that experience of watching him have the stroke.
Yeah, my husband had a stroke when he was about 37 years old. And it was a very scary experience. And had it not been for the experience that I had working at Moss Rehab Hospital in Philadelphia, I would have not known about the warning signs. It happened one morning as I was leaving for work, actually, and I asked him a question. And the way he answered, his speech was slurred, and I knew that that was not his normal speech. So I asked him to sit up for a minute. And reluctantly, he sat up, and then I asked him to raise his arms. And he was not able to raise his arms, and I saw one side of his face was drooped. So I knew that that was a sign of possibly he was having a stroke because, number one, he had high blood pressure and he was not being noncompliant with his medication for a number of reasons. So, you know, we rushed him to the hospital and he had had a stroke. But the after effects of that, you know, for a caregiver, it is very difficult trying to help him, you know, rehabilitate, not just physically, but spiritually and mentally, helping him stay on the medication regimen, trying to get him back into the work schedule of his normal routine of working and providing. It was a little tough.
Now, Mark, I want to bring you in this conversation. You praised your wife throughout the book, and she just seemed so wonderful. I wanted to marry her. So if you ever get a divorce, tell her she can call me. And, you know, I mean, she seemed like Superwoman. So I want to give her a shout out because you mentioned in the book about the problems she had to go through with the different insurance companies and, you know, the paperwork and taking care of the kids. And then, you know, trying to find time for herself. And I think that was an important issue. She was able to, I think, at one point go to the gym. You mentioned that.
Yeah. Joy, her name is Denise. Denise is my sister's best friend. I've known her for about, 35 years. And finally we got married. I've been in love with her forever. And so, but when I had my stroke, we have twins, and they're now six. They were like two. So she had to get them in the car and then go get me in the car to take me into town for a year of therapy and physical, speech, occupational. And her patients and her mother, my mother-in-law, said, remember, Denise had never been through this before. And she was right there. And I told her just last night, you saved my life, and thank you very much.
Yes. One of the things I mentioned to Mark right before we came on is how vulnerable he was in the book. And for all of you out there, Mark's book is A Change in the Weather, Life After the Stroke, and it has a foreword by Bill Cosby. I didn't know Bill Cosby actually was working in physical therapy when he was in the services, so that was something new. But I want to read one of the vulnerable parts in the book. He had a free day from his therapy. He was able to go home for the first time, and he talks about that experience with his wife, and he says, so anyway, we cuddled, and it had been a long, long time since we had cuddled together like this. And all during that long, long time, I'm sure we each took turns wondering when we'd find ourselves in this kind of intimate situation again. We even talked about it a little. At times, the idea of making love had been the furthest thing from our minds, and at other times, it probably was one of the only things we could think about, as much for the simple pleasure of the act itself as for what it represented about our lives going forward. Well, you can probably guess where I'm headed with this. But I won't read any more. You have to go buy the book. But
that's
let's
right.
just say, you know, Mark had a nice time.
Well, cliffhanger, Mark. Cliffhanger.
Thank you, Rami. I told that story in Canton, Ohio, and I kind of hemmed and hawed because I didn't know should I be as forthcoming. But then I told the story, and survivors just about cheered because they want to know, can they do what they did before a stroke, if they can do it after having a stroke. Mm-hmm. And I remember I tell them when I was checking out a couple of days later, the nurse who had me checking out had a list of do's and don'ts. And the list of don'ts was that. And I said, oh, we've done that already. And she said, here? No.
Oh, goodness.
So anyway, she said, don't do that just yet because you might have another stroke. I asked her, when could I do it? She said, do you have a staircase in your house? I said, yes. She said, when you walk up the staircase, you can do that without breathing hard, without feeling weak. I ran.
Oh, man, that's wonderful. And talking about the things that you need to do and not do after having a stroke, in your book you mentioned about the physical therapy, but one of the most interesting things you mentioned was the occupational therapy, which maybe people aren't thinking about initially, and you yourself were resistant. Talk to the audience about that.
Well, occupational therapy is things like I couldn't button buttons, I couldn't drive, I couldn't use. I'm right-handed. I had to learn to write left-handed, shave left-handed, eat left-handed, drink left-handed. And at first, I was kind of like, why are we doing this? And so, but you do things for a reason, and when you have a stroke, to make yourself better, to heal, is doing things over and over and over. Retrain the brain to do what you didn't have to think about. And so now, after a stroke, you have to think about that. But occupational is things like that, picking up small things with your fingers, because otherwise, you just kind of drop them. And so,
yeah. One therapy you had was constraint therapy. That was very interesting, holding down the dominant side to force the weaker side to work. And talk to us about that a little bit, the constraint therapy.
Well, my dominant side was my right side. I had lost some strength and mobility in my right hand, my right leg, so I was doing everything left-handed. They would put a mitt on my left hand and make me do everything right-handed. When I came home, one of my twins said, pointed to my hand with a mitt and said, boo-boo. And I said, no, that's not a boo-boo. He said, boo-boo. And I said, okay, yeah, it's a boo-boo.
It's a boo-boo.
What it does, it makes you use, when you have a stroke, the side that you can't use, you tend to not use it. But, again, repetition. You have to force yourself to use certain things. Let me tell you this also. Recovery and coming back from a stroke, they say, is 80% mental and 20% physical. You have to kind of be stubborn. I give props to my parents for raising me to kind of put up my dukes and fight back. You have to fight back. I always say life is hard, but coming back from a stroke, but life is hard as well. So
yes.
You have to do it. You have to do it.
I want to tell you, there's a person in the chat room now. She herself experienced a stroke, she said, in 1999, and she just wanted to give blessings of her still being here. I just want to say thank you to the listeners this morning for listening to the show. Mark has a website. His website is markmcewen.com. Again, markmcewen.com. Please go to the website. You can read about the work he's doing around the country. You can get a copy of his book. Corinne, I just want to bring you into this conversation again. In terms of being a caregiver, what are some suggestions you would have for caregivers dealing with a partner or family member who has a stroke?
Wow, staying focused, staying grounded, being supportive as much as you can, and for yourself to get some me time as much as you can, because that's important, because you can get burnt out overwhelming yourself with your daily activities and then trying to keep your loved one focused and upbeat as well. So they have support groups out there for survivors of people who have had strokes, and that was a good resource for me as well. And a lot of the hospitals I know where I worked at, Moss Rehab Hospital, there were support groups available. So just click into those support groups. Get yourself some me time and try and, you know, because you yourself will need support as well.
Yes. Now, Dr. Whitfield, we talked about physical therapy, we talked about occupational therapy. What are some medicines that people who have strokes might have to go on afterwards?
Wow, unfortunately, a lot. You know, when you talk about stroke and heart disease, are basically one and the same. Stroke is a form of heart disease. It affects the blood vessels in the body. So individuals that usually have these problems may be on a cholesterol-reducing medication. They may be on a blood pressure medication. They may be on a diabetic medication, which will have, actually most of them are on all three of those type of medications, an aspirin or an antiplatelet medication. So there's so many things. This situation is so complex. It's just you can't take one thing out of the other. I'm in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. I'm in what used to be called the Bible Belt. The southern states is now called the stroke belt, the HIV belt. There's so many medical issues going on in the southern parts of the country. And again, a lot of it is due to our behaviors. So when you have a person that has an event like a heart attack or stroke, they end up on a lot of medications. But I'm also a strong believer, and just like Mark said, he was so strict about his diet after the stroke. And so, you know, it's like if you've had a stroke, you're at risk for having another one. So it increases your risk of having another stroke. So it's not over, okay, I had a stroke, so that's my one stroke, I'm done for the day, I can move on with my life. No, you have to really adhere to a very aggressive diet. And when you get to the point where Mark is and you're educated and you know what's going on, then you can have that piece of chocolate cake every now and then.
Right.
But we just do things in excess, and we're living to eat and not eating to live, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And so...
I'm sorry, we only have about 1 minute left, and I just want to thank all of you, Mark, especially for coming on and sharing your story. And please, everybody, check out his website, markmcewen.com. Check out his book, Change in the Weather, Life After Stroke. Thank you, Dr. Whitfield, for coming on and sharing your knowledge. Thank you, Ms. Thomas, for coming on and sharing your story. I really appreciate it. Everybody, please remember fast, numbness in your face, numbness in your arms, problems with your speech. And time is of the essence. Time is of the essence. Don't ignore these symptoms if you start having them. Thank you so much, Mark, for coming on again. Dr. Whitfield and Corinne, thank you.
Thank you, Joanne.
Ronnie, thanks.
Take
good
care.
Thank you.
Thanks, Corinne.
And Corinne,
oh, thank you.
All the best, and thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Put down that chocolate cake. I want to thank the listeners this morning for listening in. You can follow me on twitter.com/joykeys. Again, twitter.com/joykeys. You can also become a fan of the show on Facebook, so check us out on Facebook. Everyone have a wonderful Saturday and Stay tuned for the next segment with author Rebecca Walker talking about One Big Happy Family.
This is Chicago-style hot dog here. I'm not feeling too good. Turns out, along with all the other bad things my cholesterol does, they say it's a risk factor for strokes. Strokes? Sheesh. Good news from National Stroke Association. Exercising, eating right, and asking your doctor about medicines that can help lower your cholesterol, like statins, may reduce the risk of a first stroke. And if you've already had a stroke, it's even more important you lower your cholesterol.
Lower your chances of stroke by controlling your cholesterol. Visit stroke.org today.